ॐ ज्ञान व्याख्या प्रकटित पर ब्रह्म तत्त्वं निर्वाणम् ॐ ज्ञान व्याख्या प्रकटित पर ब्रह्म तत्त्वं निर्वाणम् वर्षिष्ठान्ते वसुवृषिकनयैः आवृतं ब्रह्मनिष्ठैः वर्षिष्ठान्ते वसुवृषिकनयैः आवृतं ब्रह्मनिष्ठैः आचार्येन्द्रं करकलितचिन्मुद्रम् आनन्दमूर्तिम् आचार्येन्द्रं करकलितचिन्मुद्रम् आनन्दमूर्तिम् स्वात्मारामं मुदितवदनं दक्षिणामूर्तिमेधे स्वात्मारामं मुदितवदनं दक्षिणामूर्तिमेधे. Let's go to we'll do chant verse 4 and 5. 5 is the one we're going to work on today. So you can hear some Sanskrit. Get used to Sanskrit from this. Nana chidra gato darastita mahadipa prabhava swaram. Nana chidra gato darastita mahadipa prabhava swaram. Jnanam yasya tu chakshuradikaranadvara bahispandate. Jnanam yasya tu chakshuradikaranadvara bahispandate. Janami titameva bantamanubhatye tatsamastam jagat. Janami titameva bantamanubhatye tatsamastam jagat. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Deham Pranamakindriyanyapi Maha Deham Pranamakindriyanyapi Chalam Buddhin Chashrinyam Viduhu. Deham pranamakindriyanyapi chalam buddhim cha shunyam viduhu. Shri balanda jadopamastu hamiti pranta prashambhadinah. Shri balanda jadopamastu hamiti pranta prashambhadinah. Maya shakti vilasa kalpita mahavyamoha samharine. Maya shakti vilasa kalpita mahavyamoha samharine. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye nama idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye nama idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Deham, about the sandhi. Deham pranam api indriyani api chalam buddhim cha shunyam viduhu. Shri bala anda jada upamaha tu aham iti brantaha brisham vadinaha. Maya shakti vilasa kalpita mahavyamoha samharine. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye namaha idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. The second line says there's this vadinaha brantam brantaha brisham. Vadinaha means that vadis are different schools of thought. In India, there are many many different schools of thought. There's the Shuddha Darshanas, six major schools of thought that all accept the Vedas for pramana. And then there's those are called Astikas. Then there's several schools of thought that don't accept the Vedas as a means of knowledge. They're called Nastikas. Like, for instance, the Charvakas. The Charvakas are like, they're the Indian materialists. They believe that the only pramana, the only means of knowledge that they accept is pratyaksha, is perception. So whatever, if you can see it, it's real. If you can't see it, it's not real. They don't even accept inference. Only perception. And so for them, if you were to ask them, well, who are you? You know, what is the self? Who is the self? And they're going to say, this body is the self. And then they'll say, well, it's not just this body plus the sense organs, that's the self. And then they can say, well, it's not just that, this body plus the sense organs plus the mind, this is the self. This combination is the self. And so as long as the self is here, as long as I am here, I am alive, I should follow Dharma. They're darshana, and so they accept Dharma because a Dharma, you know, action's wrong action that causes others pain, yourself or others pain. Let me put it like this. Actions that cause others that you do that cause others pain will cause you pain. That's just the law of Dharma. We go on discovering that through our experience in the world. And so the Charvakas do believe in following Dharma and having a certain ahimsa, non-injury, because that's to their benefit. As long as they're alive, they do seek happiness, as do all beings. They would like to have a full and complete life. And so following Dharma aids to having a full and complete life. So do whatever you can to bring enjoyment and pleasure to yourself following Dharma. That's basically the Charvaka. Because you're only going to be here for a short time. You're only here, as long as you're alive, you're here. When you die, you're dead. That's it. So that's the materialist. So the materialist is, you know, make merry under the umbrella of Dharma. That's the Charvaka. And so here, in this verse, this verse is kind of pointing out some of these different darshanas, and these darshanas are called, you know, vadinaha, the different schools of thought. And so the verse says, these different schools of thought are brisham, extremely brantaha, deluded, being very deluded. These schools of thought, being very deluded, they know vidhu, they know, means they have this conviction. What convictions could they have? Well, the conviction could be that deham, their conviction is that the self is the deha, the body. Or they could say the self is not just the body, it's the prana, because we can see a dead body. And when the body is dead, the prana stops. And so the prana is the life force in the physical body. So they would say, who I am this physical body. Or, no, I'm not just the physical body, I'm the physical body plus the vital force that enlivens the physical body, the prana. So it says, deham pranam api, so I'm the body. Or I'm deha pranam api, I'm the body with the prana also. Or you could say, you know, I also, you know, part of this body are my sense organs and my organs of action. It's not just the life breath in the body, but I can also move my body. I can walk my body. I can walk. I can talk. I can move my hands. I can grasp. These are the karmendriyas. And so I'm not just my body. I'm my body, which has this vital force and which is active and also has what we call the jnanendriyas, the sense organs. So I'm this whole complex. But when this complex, the sense organs, the living body with sense organs is alive, I'm alive. And when this body with the sense organs and the vital force is dead, I am dead. So these are different versions of Charvaka, right? Either body and vital force, or body, vital force and sense and the karmendriyas, the organs of action and the sense organs. So some of the some different schools of thought only accept the self as being this. So deha, prana, the deha, the prana, and the indriya. So it says deham, pranam, api means also, indriyani, the organs of action and the sense organs also. Now, some others now go further. They say, no, shalam buddhihi. I am the mind, the buddhi. It means the buddhi ahankara, the consciousness, the conscious mind, right? The buddhi, if you just say, now, I am a conscious being. See, if you just say the body, the sense organs, you know, the sense organs and the vital force, you're not really talking about consciousness, the ahankara, the one, the ego, the one who knows all of these things, the one who's aware of all of these things. So I can say, you know, the buddhi, the intellect, with the sense of I, the intellect has the sense of I, the ahankara belongs really to the buddhi. So I am thinking, I am seeing, I am acting. So this buddhi, the buddhi must be, the buddhi must be the conscious being, the me, you know. Not these things that I'm aware of, that I can objectify. But the only thing is, this buddhi, your intellect, your mind, is chala. Means it's always changing. And so there is a school in Baudha, it's a Buddhist school of thought, called the Kshanika Vijnanavadins. The Vijnana is the buddhi. The Kshanika Vijnanavadins will say that the consciousness, which is really experienced as the mind, the conscious mind, which they will say is the consciousness, where the consciousness is located, is kshanika. It's kshanika means it's momentary. Moment by moment by moment by moment by moment by moment. So this is a different, certain school of Baudha, where the conscious being is looked as what Swamiji sometimes call flickering consciousness. Consciousness, 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 consciousness. Each vritti, each thought modification is viewed as, you know, a conscious being. But that thought modification is replaced by another one, it's replaced by another one, it's replaced by another one. So every thought, so look at this. If you see yourself as I am a conscious being, right? And you realize that the body, in fact, is something that I can objectify. You know, consciousness can be aware of the body. I, as a conscious being, can be aware of my body. I can be aware of my prana, aware of my breath, aware of my sense organs, aware of my actions. But so I, the conscious being, the knower, then am innermost to that. But I see the knowership itself as being one with the vritti. Vritti means the thought modification. And so if I have a thought, like this thought is a conscious thought. Right? Every thought that you have, in fact, you can't have a thought that's away from consciousness. Every thought that you have is pervaded by consciousness. And so someone can say, okay, consciousness is really one with the thought, because you can't have a thought which is without consciousness. And now if you look at that, each thought that you have has consciousness, but each thought comes and goes. And so if consciousness is the thought, one with the thought, then consciousness comes and goes. You see that? This, here's this thought, here's the next thought, here's, and each thought has consciousness. Here's the conscious thought, here's the next conscious thought, here's the next conscious thought. And so we take it that there's what we call an anuvritti. It appears to us that consciousness is continuous, but it's not continuous. It's just that this conscious thought is replaced by this conscious thought, and even though the thought is differs, the consciousness doesn't. So you feel like there's a continuity of consciousness. But the consciousness and the thought are only one thing. You see what I mean? And so now this conscious thought is replaced by this conscious thought, is replaced by this conscious thought, by this conscious thought. And then they use the example that this illusion that there is only one conscious person is similar to a candle flame. Whereas actually, with a candle flame, the flame is burning. It's a burning, you know, it's the burning wick. It's the burning wax. And so the flame actually is continually changing. But the flame from one instant to the next is not the same flame. But if you're looking at that flame from the outside, it appears that there's only one flame there. Right? And so like that, the buddhi, right, the buddhi itself appears to be the conscious being, as being one with the buddhi, appears to be conscious. But because the buddhi means the mind, the vritti, the thought modification, because it is enjoying consciousness as its essential nature, and the buddhi itself changes, the thoughts change, consciousness also comes and goes, and that's who I am. I am the... I in fact, am... The I, in fact, is illusory. In fact, what is there is a continuing, changing, flickering, momentary consciousness like the candle flame. So some schools, this happens to be the Kshinika Vijnanabhadins, a school in the Buddhism. We're talking classical Buddhism here, because there's been many, many schools of Buddhism now, but these are when you get back into the Buddhist schools that were prevalent at the time of Shankara. Okay, so that's one. And then he says, so the Chalam Buddhi, the Buddhi is the self, that conscious being which is continually changing, thought after thought after thought. And then he says, and then of course there's those who say that the Atma is Shunyam. Shunyam. And those are another Bauta school, the Shunyavadins, you know. Those who take the Atma to be Shunya. Now, Shunya has different meanings. It can be sometimes translated as non-existent, sometimes translated as empty, you know, that which is devoid of anything. Devoid of anything is a little different than saying non-existent. I think when Swamiji teaches it, he teaches it more as non-existence. And I have to go back into the Brahma Sutras and see, I think Shankara looks at it like this too. But even if we were to use Shunya as non-existent, those people consider the self as non-existent. I want to explain that a little bit, what I believe from my little study of Shunyavada and Buddhism, what they mean. When you use the word self, just as a human being here in the world, just in a simple way, you're talking about this person here, this body, mind, you know, sense organs, complex. Complex is the key word. This body, mind, sense organs is a conglomerate of many different parts that are put together. And so then the question comes, if you say, you know, that you are a self, what part of you is the self? Because everything that you deem to be yourself is actually a piece of something. It's a part of something. And these parts can be dissected, you know. And so where is this sense of self? Where do you put this self? What are you actually labeling as a self? There is no such thing as a self. Some will say there's these panchaskandhas, these different parts, you know, that are put together that give the appearance of a self. But if I dissect them all, we see, you know, we see there's an appearance of the self, but there's no real thing to be called a self. And the Buddha, he uses the example of a chariot, you know, because back then is what it was. Jesus is the example of a chariot. We have the word chariot. But if you actually analyze the object, chariot, there's no such thing. There's a wheel and seat and, you know, the axle, you know, and nails and screws and all of these various types of pieces of wood and paint and all of these things put together. And it functions as a chariot. But there's no thing chariot. There's a conglomerate chariot. And so some people will say, there is no such thing. What you are calling a self, there really is no such thing, just like there really is no such thing as a chariot. There's only a conglomerate of things that give the sense of there being a self. And so here, in this verse, what they're saying, Shankara considers these different schools to be deluded. extremely deluded, and he'll tell what causes the delusion in a minute. He says, these are very deluded. These schools are very deluded. They think that the Atma is the body, is the prana, is the indriyas, is the ever-moving buddhi, or that the Atma just simply is not there. It's a total illusion. Then he goes, Shri Bala Anda Jada Upamaha. He says, they are deluded just like women, Shri. Most of it, when I hear Swamiji or any of the Indians do this, you know, when they do this, when instead of, they'll do all of the other ones first. And then they'll kind of, so let me just tell you what these are. These people they're totally ignorant, they're totally deluded. Like who? Shri, like women. Bala, like children. Like Jeddah. Jeddah means people who are totally, it literally means inert. But Jeddah as a person means somebody who's dull or slow or totally uneducated. It means a dull person who has no education is Jeddah. Not just no uneducated, but also dull and slow. So Shri, women, Bala, children, Anda, blind people who are blind, who they can't see anything, they're blind, physically blind. Mm-hmm. Or Jeddah, people who are very ignorant and also dull. So Upamaha. Upamaha means they are like these. So these people, these bodies, these different schools of thought, they're like these people, they take all of this for granted. Vidduhu, they know it. It's mithya, what we call mithya jnana. It's a false cognition, but they're very, very, they're very much, they are very much attached to it. They're committed to this, to these ideas. And the thing is, with these vadis, these different schools, these people are people who have done a lot of vichara. In other words, they've put their mind, they're philosophers, they've put their mind to this, and they come up with these philosophies, like the Charvakas, you know, you're the physical body, you're the physical body and the mind, that's who you are. See where it says, Shri Bala Anda Jada Upamaha Tu Ahamiti, I am, right? I am the body, I am the prana, I am the indriyas, I am all of these things. That's their conviction, and they have a philosophy around it, supporting it. And so Shankara is saying that these different schools are just totally ignorant. They're totally deluded, just like women, children, Anda, or Jeddah. And so, now, this Shri, I'm just going to go through all of them and give the philosophy behind it, or why, because this isn't the only place where Shri is used, where women, you know, are put into this category. And so I'm just going to say a few words about where they're coming from. I think in India, especially in there's more of an education now, more equality of the sexes. And I wouldn't even say that's not even the right way to say it. It's that women were looked at as mothers and people who ran the home and did the cooking and were concerned with, you know, taking care of everybody. They weren't involved in thinking. They weren't involved in things that required vichara, any type of analysis, or any type of viveka, any type of discrimination. Their heart and life was just totally involved in taking care of their husband and children and the house. And then, you know, meeting together and sitting around in a circle and you know, shelling peas and, you know, and making the chapati and all of that. So they would see the women as really the caretakers of the home, and that's who they were, and that's what they were supposed to be doing, and they were supposed to be all about taking care of their husband and their child and their children and sending their servants to go shopping and talking and gossiping with each other and have no space or concern whatsoever about any type of vichara, any type of analysis. Even though in the Upanishads, there are some women like Maitreyi and different women in the Upanishads who ask their rishi, husband, you know, before you, one rishi was getting ready to go off and take sannyas and go out in the forest, and she said, before you go, please teach me everything you know. Mm. And so it's not like there aren't some women exceptions, yeah, you know, who were revered and all of that. But the basic idea of a woman is somebody who's taking care of her husband and child in the home, and that's the involvement, that's where the heart is, and spending all day cooking and all of these type of things. They're not exposed. They're not thought of as being somebody who would be interested in that, and they're not exposed to it. And so I think that was the basic thinking. And so somebody like Swamiji, like when he would do it, he would say uneducated women. You know? That's okay. You know, it's just that now, there aren't so many uneducated women. There aren't so many women that are not kind of included in the act of thinking, you know, using viveka, using discrimination and all that. But they used to be categorized in this way. This is not the only place. So I just kind of want to give you a feel for what they're thinking there. Like, what is your role? Well, your role, say if you're the husband looking at his wife and children, well, your role is to take care of me, you know, to take care of me and the home and everything, and that's what you love to do. And one really interesting thing, I've noticed in, you know, the many years I've been in India, is that the women there that I've experienced, I don't experience women, at least this is from the 70s on, as having a lack of viveka any more than men have a lack of viveka or a lack of interest in vichara any more than men. I mean, men either, you know, are interested in pursuing this knowledge or they're not interested in it. And women are interested in it or they're not interested in it. And so if they're not interested in it, they have no interest in it. It doesn't cross their mind. They're interested in what they're interested in. But I do notice that, at least in India, that the women really do enjoy being together and do enjoy cooking, and they spend hours doing that type of thing. It's different there. And it's also something that is much more revered than it is here. So it is a different culture. But the women now, this doesn't really apply. I feel like probably, you know, in the older days, who knows when, that women were not even considered by men as beings that would be interested in pursuing knowledge or anything like that, or really of thinking. They're interested in cooking, learning how to cook new dishes, and learning how to sing, you know, learning how to dance and do these kind of things, because that was their area. It's just like if you remember, you may be, some of you are too young for this, but if you remember back in the 50s, you know, women could either, if you ask, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, you get to be a secretary, or a nurse, or an airline stewardess, right? Secretary, nurse, airline stewardess.
Teacher.
Or a teacher. Mm-hmm. Those were your jobs. But, you know, like being an engineer or a scientist, there's poor Madame Curie who was out there all by herself for such a long time. You know, there was just these few things that... you know, there was just these few things that you even thought about for women. This is kind of your sphere. That's not how it is now. It's not how it is in India either. I mean, there's still glass ceiling and all, but there's just a different consciousness. Well, when these things were written, that really different consciousness I don't think was there, because it comes up so much in the text. And, you know, we try to kind of skirt around it, because especially if the teacher's a man, they do not want to insult us in that way. But, you know, it's also kind of nice to try to understand it. Then Bala, our children, little children aren't yet in a position to use viveka. They don't even have logic available to them. The Anda, the blind people, you know, I actually don't know why they're including blind people, because blind people could as well have viveka. But maybe they're looking at blind people as beggars or some people who are uneducated, you know. And Jada means people who are uneducated and who are dull-witted people. You can see. So the dull-witted. I don't understand the blind. So Shri Bala Anda Jada Upamaha. These people, the idea is, what he's saying is that these different schools of thought, these vadis, vadi means an actual school of thought, these people are not using their minds. Here they created a whole school of thought. And upon, if you were to really use your mind and use viveka, you could, these schools of thought could not hold. And so therefore the people that are proponents of these schools of thought are not using their buddhi. They're not using their full capacity. They're not using their mind. That's the idea. And so then what he says is, maya shakti vilasa kalpita mahavyamoha samharine. This is all one word. This is one long compound. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtiye Nama Idam Shri Dakshinamurtiye. He says, my salutations to the Lord Dakshinamurti. The Lord Dakshinamurti is Shiva, Lord Shiva, as the first teacher. The one who, Dakshinamurti is the one who's sitting in that meditative box underneath the banyan tree, you know, or the vata tree. He's sitting with his chin mudra in meditation. He's considered and teaching in silence with his chin mudra. This chin mudra is this, the body, mind, sense organs. So the body, mind, sense organs, and this is the ahankara. This is Brahman. This is the self. So the ahankara, the I notion, is its identity is with Brahman, not with the body, mind, sense organs. Mm-hmm. So Dakshinamurti is sitting in silence with some sages, rishis, that are sitting around him, great seers sitting around him, just holding this chin mudra, because these people are learned people, and sitting in contemplation, which means that his mind is resolved into the self, recognizing Brahman, the self, as the I, as the truth of the, when you say I am, it goes to Brahman. And rather than the samsari, right, whose self is identified with the body, mind, sense organs. So salutations, my salutations, these salutations to the Lord Dakshinamurti, who is in the form of my guru. So that's that Shri Guru Murtiye, who is in the form of the guru. It's usually the passing of the sampradaya from guru to sisha, guru to sisha, guru to sisha. So I see Lord Dakshinamurti now, because if you think of the sampradaya of the teaching of the Upanishads, what it was that Dakshinamurti was teaching is now what, say, he taught to his students, then his students recognize the same self, I am that self, the very self that Dakshinamurti recognizes himself to be, Brahman. Dakshinamurti recognizes I am Brahman. Then his student recognizes I am Brahman, right, the same one Brahman. And then his student, being taught the soul sampradaya, the whole teaching methodology by Dakshinamurti, now teaches his student or her student that same teaching, which then is recognized I am Brahman. And then they teach their students I am Brahman. And so really the form of Dakshinamurti, the one who is Dakshinamurti, is the one who is the guru. And the teaching method, because I recognize I am Brahman, Dakshinamurti recognizes I am Brahman, I am the very Brahman, which is Dakshinamurti. So in fact, I am Dakshinamurti in the sense that I am Brahman, that I am the same self. And the teaching methodology that's handed down in the form of the Upanishads is exactly the same. So they look at the sampradaya as one candle lighting the next, lighting the next, lighting the next, lighting the next. So now you see in the Dakshinamurti in the form of your teacher, because your teacher also, hopefully, knows I am Brahman. If the teacher doesn't know I am Brahman, then we've got a big problem here. But if the teacher knows I am Brahman, right, and is able to, and has been part of that sampradaya, that teaching methodology, then the teaching methodology just flows on from guru to sisha, guru to sisha, guru to sisha, guru to sisha. And so, in fact, one of the beautiful things about understanding that sampradaya is that the sisha, the guru teaches the sisha who then is equal to the guru. That's why one candle flame lights the next candle flame, you know, lights the next candle, lights the next candle. It's not that this guru may be good looking and and this guru may be, this student must be, you know, homely. Okay, everyone, really good looking guru, and we've got a homely student. Okay. But this good looking guru knows I am Brahman. And this homely student knows I am Brahman. And this female student knows I am Brahman. And this male student knows I am Brahman. Brahman isn't becoming good looking or homely, you know, and isn't becoming a man or a woman. There's only one Brahman. And that one Brahman is that changelessly abiding self, which you recognize, that, like what I was doing in meditation. It's that very simple being, you know, that is the same in all of us. That being that is I is the being, is the one I that there is. So this I, when I say I am, the me that I'm enjoying as myself is the only me that there is. So when I say me, the word is labeling me. Right? The word me, so say in this room, 10 people or whatever, each one of us can say through the mind, your mind, the vritti, the buddhi, says me or I am. So I've got 10, 12 I am thoughts. Right? Those are different. Right? Because maybe only right now if I ask all of you to think, say I am, so maybe 10 of the 12 of you actually do it. Okay? Maybe 5 of you. You actually think I am. The other are thinking, I don't want to think I am. Or you're just, your mind is just, you know, moving right along. Okay? So the I am thought is just simply a label of your own presence. There's going to be many I am thoughts, and we can all not be having an I am thought right now also. You know. But when you do say I am, you are labeling yourself. The label doesn't do anything to you. In other words, the label I am doesn't make you be, and it doesn't give meanness to your being. You know, me, the sense of me, does not require the I am thought. You know, like if I say I am, you think that that thought, I am, gives you the experience of self. Do you need the I am thought to be me? Say no. And the I am thought, like all thoughts, come and go. But the me, the conscious being that is you, is not something that's coming and going. It's abiding. It's changeless, in fact. And it is this me, this very simple me that is me, that I identify with as me. I might take this me to be the body or the mind or the sense organs. But this me that is there, that is me, is only one. And so if I were to get rid of the whole universe, what is left is the conscious being. And what is the conscious being experience? Me, without the word me, without the word I am, just the essential nature of consciousness, which is me. So this me, that yourself, is something that continues constantly, changelessly, pervades and is present to every experience that you have. But if I take away those experiences that are coming and going, because they're coming and going, why not just for the moment take all of them away? They're coming and going anyway. So take all of them away, and what is left is me. And now, say I take all of them away from all of us. What is left is me. In fact, you have two experiences. You have the me, the self experience, and then all of these things that are coming and going. The experiences that are coming and going can't be you, because they come and go. It's very simple. You don't come and go. But because you don't come and go, the experiences that do come and go, whether they belong to your body-mind or your body-mind, whoever they belong to, these coming and going experiences, they don't touch you and they don't touch me. They're totally irrelevant to my own being. So my, the being, the me that I am, is the me that is the me that is Brahman, is the me that is Ishvara. So there is no other me, this very benign me. In fact, when I said, you know, if you look at yourself, all you can change all of it you can change and tweak and improve, or actually make worse. All of your experiences, all of your thoughts, all of your emotions, you can send your emotions to hell and back, and to heaven. You know, the emotions can be so beautiful, so loving, so compassionate, you know, so wonderful. And they can also be so painful and so angry and so cruel. There's just a huge, what do you call it, just a huge display of emotions from heaven to hell that we have. And these emotions are coming and going and changing, and we prefer certainly to have the more positive emotions than the negative ones. But these emotions, for all of us, they come and go and I remain. I'm there before, during, and after. And it's this. So these emotions we can work on. It's what we call antakarana shuddhi. We try to purify our mind and purify our attitudes to make the mind more stable, more kind, more generous, more compassionate toward myself and toward others. Myself means my thoughts and feelings and actions, that I have a more compassionate mind that makes that it's more of an inner friend and an outer friend to the world, an inner friend to my internal responses and an outer friend to the world. That's what I value, and that's what we value in others. We value in others, oh, you know, love me, be kind to me, respect me, think I'm a great person, see the good in me. You know, don't see the bad. The bad is there, don't notice it. Just notice it. Give me the benefit of the doubt. Know that I'm a good person that you love and respect, and if you see some bad things, know that that's just an anomaly and that'll go away. That's not who you really are. Please see me in that way. Please give me the benefit of the doubt. That's what I want from you. Right? And that's what you want from me. And that's how we need to, our own mind needs to treat our inner feelings and thoughts also, our complexes and whatnot. Please give me the benefit of the doubt. Please help me, you know. That all these inner complexes, they want me to, you know, love me, care about me, see me as a good person, know that I'm doing my best. Mm-hmm. That's what we all want. Mm-hmm. We love to be around people who are like that, and we don't like to be around the others. And we like to be, even in our partners and our people close to us, we like to be with our partners or our family when they're acting that way toward us. I love you, I respect you, I think that you're a good person. I'm glad to be with you, I admire you, I think you're good. You know, then I like to be with you. Please come over. But family, even family members, my closest people to me, you know, if they're in one of those dispositions where, you know, I hate your guts, or I just don't respect you at all, I can't see how you can act this way, then what do you want to do? Either you leave or I'll leave. You leave or I'll leave. Because it's painful. Right? So, all of these, what we want, and we can change. We can change how we respond to the world and how we respond to ourselves. Because these are things that exist within duality. I can do something about them, definitely. I can work on myself. I can work on a look at the things I really value, look at my behavior and all of this, and work on myself and create a nicer inner room, you know, a nicer inner way of being. And we do that. And we have a value for doing it. It's like emotional maturity and spiritual growth, saintliness, all of these type of things. We can do that. With yourself, it is different. Yourself doesn't lend itself for doing anything to. It is stable and whole and complete as it is. And there's nothing you can do about that. You can say, you can do little experiments. Like, let me just tweak around. Let's see if I can change my own nature, the nature of my presence, of this being. Can I change it? Can I put a bag over? Can I hide it? Can I get away from it? Can I do anything to it? Say, there's no way, it's not possible. And then the very important question to ask yourself is, do I want to change it? Do I want to change me, my own being, my own presence? And then you see, No, I don't. In fact, there's nothing more dear to me. That is the most dear. And as your mind makes that differentiation and understands that, then, and understands there's nothing you can do about it. You can't hurt it, you can't take it away, you can't make it go away. Then the mind has found, you know, an inner home. An inner home that is blessing all of the thoughts, good and bad. And the mind starts, that becomes really, your own presence becomes your sanctuary, actually. And you also recognize that that inner presence is Ishvara, is the very self, it's the very self of all beings, it's the very self of the whole. And so the whole Mahavakya of the Upanishad is, I am Ishvara, means this conscious being that I am is the conscious being that you are, is the conscious being that Ishvara is. And so now you don't feel, as you recognize and understand that, you don't feel any separation from the divine or any separation from the Lord. Because in fact, the one who is your very being is Bhagavan. So there's no time that you are away from that self, which is the self of the whole. And so here, I'm going to do most of this long one, work some more on it next week. But what this says is, salutations to my teacher, who some haughty name, who removes this great moha, this great all-pervasive delusion, vyamoha. It's the delusion that all beings suffer from just by the very fact of being born in this creation, because you're enjoying a natural limitation brought about by the body-mind-sense organ. So how that all works, we'll look more next week. But it says, salutations to Dakshinamurti in the form of my guru, who removes some completely, some harine, some yakharine, completely removes this huge, this great grand delusion, which is a product of the play of the Maya Shakti, of the power of Maya. So Maya has two powers, avarana vikshepa, the power to cover and the power to project. So next week we'll look at this line, how this Maya actually works. You know, that is responsible for bringing about this beginningless ignorance that's responsible for this Bhranti, this complete, from this delusion that is really something that all living creatures suffer from just by the very fact of being born. So we'll look at that in more depth next week. So that's our prayer. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadashate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.